Welcome to Gillespie on FTRRadio.com. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. With me, as always, is my crew, Mark Warner to my left, Mike Jazierski, the man who makes the show run every week, is right across from me. Christy Kelly is working on
Don't blame me for how this show turns out.
And Christy Kelly, she is finishing up some school projects. Congratulations to Christy. She got a job promotion. So she has to take some time away to work on some classes, get some things fixed for her job promotion. So congratulations to her. We'll have her back in a couple of weeks. But yes, if you listened to last week's show, we're back to the normal here. We're actually recording with mics and everything else. We've avoided the Skype issue, but we do plan on having a really good show for you this week. We have a very special guest, a friend of ours, Jacob Perry. You may have heard his ads run the last couple of shows. He is a consultant down in Florida. He's going to be giving his view on the Florida primary results from last week, and he'll be giving us some really good insights. And, of course, as always, I'd like to invite you back to check out my website, joshgillespie.net, where you can find previous episodes of Gillespie, including my monologues as well as other commentaries. But, friends, if you caught last week's monologue, you heard me discuss the two main competing philosophies of government here in the United States. We specifically discussed the benefits of the limited government philosophy under which the nation was founded, the principles we have enabled the United States to become perhaps the greatest nation which has ever existed. We talked about the importance of a consistent framework of laws to operate under, as well as allowing free people the room to use their own creative and energy to thrive. However, in this current environment, the left has done a fairly decent job of painting the GOP as an obstructionist party, the so-called party of no. But this is silly. This silly party of no nonsense would have you believe that Republicans in Washington are just a collection of frat boys trying to annoy the Democrats in charge by being as big of a pain in the rear as possible. At least that's what the Democrats and their allies in the media would have you believe. They want you to think the Republicans are just wandering around Capitol Hill trying to see what mischief can be caused next. Unfortunately for them, we have Congressman Paul Ryan, a policy wonk with reverence for bold new ideas. Congressman Ryan approaches new ideas the way Nancy Pelosi does a fundraiser, with an energy and excitement that literally overtakes you. He's not afraid to put something out there for discussion, nor is he reading the latest polls, or God forbid, a teleprompter, in order to decide what he should say next. But the funny thing about Congressman Ryan's roadmap, which will be posted at joshgillespie.net, is that there isn't anything on it that you would classify as far out there or truly off the map. Well, unless you've made government your god and worship at the altar of Keith Olbermann. Instead, Congressman Ryan's roadmap is filled with the kind of ideas that swept a soft-spoken former governor of California into the presidency about 30 years ago. In fact, there's no question that Congressman Ryan would have been very much at home in the Ronald Reagan administration. The sad thing about this discussion is that Democrats will say that these ideas are simple, that governing is too complicated to fit onto a bumper sticker, as if "yes, we can" was the deepest policy statement in the history of political campaigns. Cutting taxes to allow more people to keep their money that would have worked so hard for? Just more tax cuts for the rich, say our friends on the left. Reducing the size and scope of our government so that the final bill can be lowered? Just more attempts to starve the poor or hurt women and children is the predictable response from liberals. It's just too bad we don't have any way to prove that our ideas or on the economy actually work, at least evidence from a more recent time than Ronald Reagan. Or do we? Well, just as it so happens, the good folks of Germany have provided us such evidence. Germany, you say? The land of cradle-to-grave welfare state? Birthplace of Marx? Why, yes, the very same Germany is currently providing us all the needed evidence to prove that we are correct, that Congressman Ryan's roadmap is exactly the prescription that this sick economy is crying for. What if I told you that the German economy has essentially recovered from this so-called Great Recession, that economic growth and unemployment figures are better than when this global slowdown ever even began? Would you believe me? Would you believe New York Times columnist David Brooks, one of President Obama's biggest fans? According to Mr. Brooks' latest column entitled The Parent Model, he describes how this recession was a great opportunity to demonstrate two completely different economic theories, the borrow-and-spend approach favored by American liberals and the cut-and-reduce model eventually enacted by the German government. So, while the U.S. borrowed about 6% of our GDP in an attempt to spend our way out of trouble, the Germans only spent 1.5% of their GDP on some immediate short-term items. As Brooks writes in his column, American economists accused German policymakers of risking a long-term depression. The German finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, I believe that's how you say his name, countered, governments should not become addicted to borrowing as a quick fix to stimulate demand. In the immortal words of the great philosopher Homer Simpson, don't! So there you have it. Actual physical real-life evidence that conservative economic theory is superior to liberal economic theory. This debate has moved out of the textbooks and into history, and we have won. Our ideas are superior, and they work, and we can now, again, point to the evidence. As Lady Margaret Thatcher once said, the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. Well, Lady Thatcher, I'd say that we've arrived at that point. And friends, we have arrived at that point. We see that our American economy is borrowing left and right. We are in incredible debt to the Chinese government, and they could turn that in at any time. Thankfully, they don't, but they could. We're in debt not just to China, but to other nations as well. And we keep on borrowing. We keep on borrowing from this generation and the next generation and the next generation. Frankly, I want to know where that $787 billion that the stimulus went to the stimulus last year is still coming from. Where can it come from except from tax hikes or from robbing from existing programs that we have currently in government? And we are robbing from future generations. We're robbing from ourselves.
All I can wonder is when is the credit card going to finally get declined?
That's what I want to know too. I mean, like I said last week, you know, or I believe it, maybe it was a couple of weeks ago, about the whole concept of the party of no. It's funny, it's catchy, and in a sense, I wish I'd come up with it myself. But the fact is that it's false. It is a false description of what the Republicans are. We offer plans. And the thing is that I was watching Fox News this past week, and when they brought up, John Boehner even came out with a plan last week, which we'll want to get into in the next segment. But John Boehner and Paul Ryan, they each have their own plans. The Republican study committee, the chairman, Tom Price, came up with his own health care plan. And here's the thing, is that we offer these plans, and the immediate reaction from the left is, well, that's just dumb. That can't work. Like what they passed is going to work. Seriously. I mean, the Democrats out there are just
nuts. The Democrats just have the idea. Spend more. Oh, we didn't spend enough. That's, you know, just like the rhetoric with unemployment. I believe the latest figures come out, it's somewhere in the 10 range, I think, nationwide. In the high nines, low tens.
It's between 9.5 and 10%.
In that range. And yet Obama went around and said, oh, unemployment won't get above 8% if we pass the stimulus. Now the left is saying, oh, just imagine what it would be if we didn't pass the stimulus.
I remember the headline on Drudge Report last week was I can't exactly remember the exact headline, but it was talking about how the stimulus had failed. It's like, where are the jobs? You know, why isn't our economy growing? And the thing is that, you know, the stimulus, it hasn't worked. It's been a colossal failure. And yes, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, they were all out there saying that unemployment, you know, we'll have it below 8%. Well, you know what? Just 2 years ago, even 5 years ago, when Bush was president, unemployment was 5%.
And they called that high.
And they did call that high. And yeah, our economy was definitely on the downswing then. But the thing is that, you know, at least the jobs were holding steady. And, I mean, consider 5% unemployment nationally is usually considered full employment, oddly. But, of course, then again, if you're Speaker Pelosi, then unemployment means that's good for the economy. Do you remember that a couple yes. weeks ago? She said that more people...
Unemployment stimulates the economy. Well, at the rate they're going, they're really stimulating the economy.
Exactly. It's just madness. And, you know, but again, it gets me back to these, you know, it comes back to the whole, you know, Paul Ryan offers his plan. John Boehner offers his plan. Tom Price of Georgia offers his plan. We offer plans to counter what the Democrats are doing. And the thing is, we come in and say, you know, we'll work with you. I mean, we disagree with where you're coming from. We do not think that there should be universal health care. But the thing is that we want to offer a plan. There are things that we can work on. And the Democrats say, you know, we don't like that. You know what we're going to do is we're going to stick that in committee. It's not going to see the light of day. And so the Democrats can stick a Republican plan in committee and then continue to call the Republicans the party of no, just because they're saying no to their plans. Well, like I said to my counterpart, Thomas Cook, a couple weeks ago on a local Fox station when we were discussing a possible Mitch Daniels presidency. You know, he wanted to label the Republicans the party of no. And I was like, you know what? What happens is that you say no. You say no to our stuff. You're the party of no. We offer plans. And I can point to 3, 4, 5 different examples of where Republicans have offered plans. Heck, Republicans offered over 50 different bills. He's like, oh, the bills weren't good. You know, or we incorporated some of your stuff. I'd be like, where is the stuff that you incorporated that Republicans would support?
A bill entitled.
Exactly. And, you know, it's nowhere to be seen. And frankly, the liberals are nuts. They're crazy. And the solutions that they offered aren't solutions. They're only continuing the economic downturn of this country.
You know, going back to your monologue where you mentioned Germany, let's take this into the second segment.
Well, yeah, we'll take this into the second segment because we've run out of time here. But we'll be right back after these messages. We'll be talking about the Boehner plan and the Paul Ryan plan. We got a lot of good stuff coming up for you, folks. We'll be right back.
All right, you people on the left and right coasts, listen up. If you want to know what your fellow conservatives in the heartland of America, or as you call it, the flyover country, are thinking, go to your web browser and look at HoosierAccess.com. There you will find out what is on the mind of conservatives from the crossroads of America. HoosierAccess.com is the source for news, opinion, and commentary from conservative minds in the heartland. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today. You can also follow at Hoosier Access on Twitter and Hoosier Access on Facebook and subscribe to this show and podcast forum on iTunes. That's HoosierAccess.com.
Do you ever wish you could listen to FTR radio on your phone? You know, you're away from your laptop and you're thinking, dang, Gillespie is on right now, but I'm missing him because, you know, I don't have my laptop. I don't have my desktop. How can I listen to him? I'll tell you exactly how. What you do is if you got a smartphone, you go to your app section, you know, and what you do is you download the Shoutcast app. And once you download that, you search for From the Right Radio. Then you bookmark it. Then you can listen to Gillespie every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on FTR, or on the Shoutcast app. Or you can listen to, I don't know, maybe the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy, the Smart Girl Report with Jenny Erickson, you know, Tabitha Hale, Caleb Howe, any of the rock stars that we got here on FTR Radio, Shoutcast app. You can be on the beach listening to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Gillespie on FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. We ended the last segment talking about the two dichotomies between the United States and Germany, where the liberals and how they've been taking our economy in Germany and how a more conservative government has been taking their economy, and they're seeing growth in Germany. And, Mike, you were about to point to an example.
Yes. Back several years ago in the early 2000s, the German Liberal Party, known as SPD, was in charge, and unemployment there was somewhere around 20%. A dear friend of mine lost his job as a computer programmer in Munich, and he spent 3 years without a job in Germany. All this time, you know, the government in charge there just said, well, since you're unemployed, we'll just keep paying you. Well, finally, the German government ran out of money. There was no money to keep paying people to be unemployed. He finally had to leave Germany and immigrate to the UK, and he found a computer programming job there, which, amazingly enough, which was under the control of Tony Blair at the time, which, you know, yeah, he was part of the Labour Party, but he was more or less in the middle.
He was a middle guy.
He was a middle.
Well, especially when it came to the war.
When it came and things like that. But going back to Germany, soon after, around 2004, 2005 or so, they had a general election in Germany, and the opposing party, which is known as CDU, took over. Angela Merkel.
Very, I would have just called her Angela Merkel, but
Angela Merkel became the prime minister and basically started, reform this, let's get this economy moving again. Germany, I mean, their economy has come back, to great amounts. And whether you're talking about the automobile industry with Volkswagen, BMW, Mercedes-Benz. In fact, there was a time in there when the parent company of Mercedes-Benz, Daimler owned Chrysler Motors.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we know what happened to that deal. Now Chrysler is owned by the U.S. government, part by Fiat.
Mm-hmm.
Fix it again, Tony. Anyway, now, and I think we would be wise to look at some of the things that Merkel has implemented in Germany, said, hey, they brought their economy back from the brink of extinction, and we're heading down that road.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing is that, I mentioned before in the previous segment about how the whole party of no concept. Well, here's the thing is that we are the party of ideas. And I'm going to point to you first. I want to point to John Boehner's plan, which he introduced last week, and then we'll get to Paul Ryan's plan. And you can find John Boehner's plan on the main page of GOPleader.gov, and it will take you to I'm actually looking at the executive summary of the five steps President Obama can take right now. Right now, that's the thing, is that these are current thinking plans, and then we have Paul Ryan's forward thinking map plans. John Boehner, in his speech that he delivered last week, I believe it was to the City Club of Cleveland. I can't remember if I got the name of that right, but he detailed five steps Republicans believe President Obama must immediately take to help small businesses create jobs and put an end to the economic uncertainty that is hamstringing the nation's economic growth. Five steps included stop job-killing tax hikes on families and small business, veto job-killing lame duck legislation, because I'm almost positive that we're going to be seeing a lame duck session. The president could put a stop to that. And the lame duck legislation we're talking about could include cap and tax and other things that could come up at that time. He can call on congressional Democrats to stop obstructing efforts to repeal harmful Obamacare. Now, we know that's not going to happen. The harmful Obamacare 1099 mandate. Let's see. I want to go into this a little bit further. This is what it says on the GOP leader site. Boehner also said the president should, as he put it, call on Democratic leaders in Congress to stop obstructing Republicans' attempts to repeal the new health care law's job-killing 1099 mandate. What is, and this is quoting John Boehner, what is the point of making employers and entrepreneurs spend $17 billion to send all this paperwork to Washington, where it is going to cost about $10 billion to log it in and file it away? He's got a point. Okay, step number four, cut spending to create jobs. Boehner called on the Obama administration to send Congress an aggressive spending reduction package. I'm not telling you there's no money left, Boehner said. In fact, we're broke. We have no money. There's nothing, unless he wants to go, rob your pocket, rob my pocket, rob the pockets of everybody listening to this show. He could do that, I guess. And five, ask for and accept, and this was key, and this made the big headlines last week, ask for and accept the resignations of Secretary Geithner and Larry Summers, the head of the National Economic Council. Boehner said Obama must fire his entire economic team, saying Washington is hampered by endless spending sprees, entangled tax structures, and bureaucracy run amok, the top House Republican said on Tuesday. The president must break with the economic team that 19 months into his tenure has failed to lower the unemployment rate. That was the entire point of the stimulus package, wasn't it? That's what we discussed.
Unemployment wasn't supposed to get below 8% under stimulus.
And, in fact, Mike Pence has also joined in. Congressman Mike Pence from Indiana has joined in Congressman Boehner in calling for Geithner's firing, and I can't remember the exact Democrat. I may have to look that up just so I can get the name. But even there has been part of the Democratic, I believe he's a committee chairman, has also joined Boehner in saying that Tim Geithner
needs to be
fired.
He won't be a committee chairman for long.
That's true.
Once San Fran Nan hears about it.
Yeah, tell me about it. But then, of course, you know, we have also the Paul Ryan plan, which I want to get to. I'm looking, actually, this is where I'm looking at the executive summary, is of the Paul Ryan plan, which you can find. And now this is a lengthy URL, www.roadmap.republicans.budget.house.gov.
What webmaster set that one up?
Yeah, exactly. That's that's definitely what we call a government address. Anyway, we look at the executive summary for Paul Ryan's roadmap, and just to kind of get just if people aren't familiar with Paul Ryan's roadmap. It is a roadmap for America's future. It's a comprehensive alternative to the heavily government-centered ideology now prevailing in Washington, which pursues a relentless expansion of government and creates a growing culture of dependency, and in the process worsens a status quo that has already threatens to overwhelm the budget and smother the economy. The roadmap, updated to reflect the dramatic decline in the nation's economic and fiscal conditions since its previous introduction in 2008. Whoa! This thing's been around for 2 years. We're the party of no? This thing's been around for 2 years. It draws on American strengths to restore the nation's legacy of leaving the next generation better off. And it achieves these three key objectives, which is providing health and retirement security, lifting the debt burden, promoting American job creation and competitiveness. And we got charts, we got graphs, you know. You got the major plan components include health care, Medicare, Social Security, tax reform, job training, with other key features being comprehensiveness, which are backed up by numbers, and it's basically offering a true alternative. And, again, I suggest everybody to check out Paul Ryan's roadmap. If you don't remember the entire address, just Google Paul Ryan roadmap, and it'll take you to the site.
You'll find it linked on joshgillespie.net, right?
You'll also find it there, and on Hoosier Access. We'll also have it there. But the thing is like I said, you know, by the way, it was Democrat Congressman Tom Perillo. He is the one who joined the Congressman Boehner. Anyway, the Republicans have offered ideas. And Paul Ryan's, like I said in my opening monologue, is forward thinking. It takes the concepts of Reagan, and it's a modern version, essentially. Now, I'm not calling Paul Ryan a present day Ronald Reagan, because the one thing that I want people listening to this show and conservatives all across the country to understand, who love and yearn for another Ronald Reagan, we're not going to get one. What we need to be doing, instead of looking to the past for our future leader, is looking to our present and future crop of people and looking for our future leader. And they may embody the principles of Reagan, but we have to stop looking for another Ronald Reagan. We need to be looking for someone who embodies those principles. We can't constantly compare these people to Ronald Reagan. We'll always be disappointed, because there will never... God broke the mold when he made Ronald Reagan, let's be honest. But at least as far as the major plan components for health care, What Paul Ryan wants to do is provide a refundable tax credit, $2,300 for individuals and $5,700 for families, to purchase coverage in any state. Whoa! We're talking about...
That sounds familiar.
I know. Tom Price introduced that. Was in part of H.R. 3400, which was a Republican plan. But no, that got nowhere. To purchase coverage in any state and keep it with them if they move or change jobs. I swear we've heard this before. Establishes transparency in healthcare price and quality data. This is critical information. This critical information is readily available before an individual needs health services. And modernizes Medicaid and strengthens the healthcare safety net by reforming high-risk pools, giving states maximum flexibility to tailor Medicaid programs to specific needs of their populations. Now, with this bill passing, that is going to thrust 500,000 people on Medicaid in just Indiana alone. It's nuts. Anyway, I encourage all of our listeners to check out the banner plan at gopleader.gov and the Paul Ryan roadmap, which we just briefly got into, at roadmap.republicans.budget.house.gov, or just Google Paul Ryan roadmap. That'll probably be a heck of a lot easier. We've come to the end of this particular segment. Our next segment, I want you guys to stick around. I know the Florida primary was a week away, but we're going to be talking to Jacob Perry, who is a native of Florida. He's a Florida consultant, and he has been familiarizing with the primary results. We're going to get his input on what we expect in the governor's race, in the Senate race, and in a couple other key Florida races. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hey, fellow conservatives, when you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Mocha Choco, whatever, in the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. At HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today. You are listening to Gillespie on FTRRadio.com.
Hey, real quick here, guys. Before we get back to the show, I just want to talk to you a little bit about stories. We all love them. We all have them. Whether you're a candidate for public office or a small business, you have a story which is incredibly unique to you. The problem isn't having a story. The problem is how to tell your story. And that's where my friend Jacob Perry comes in. Jacob is a gifted storyteller who has the added bonus of being an experienced campaign professional, marketer, sales professional, and small business owner. Not only can he put the right words together, he knows exactly what needs to be said and how to say it. So next time you need a speech sales letter, article, or marketing piece written, trust the professional I go to, trust Jacob Perry. You can reach him on the web at www.jacobperry.us, or you can give him a call at 772-678-8020. 8020. That is 772-678-8020. Or drop him a line at jacob@jacobperry.us. And welcome back to Gillespie on FTRRadio.com. I'm very pleased to have our next guest on. It is Florida political consultant Jacob Perry. You may be familiar with Jacob's name as he's been featured on ads in our last couple of shows. Jacob is also a very good friend of those of us here on the show due to his days being a consultant and campaign strategist in Indiana. Now he resides in Florida and has some really good insights on the Florida primary. Jacob, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm a big fan.
Well, thanks. I would love to get your thoughts on what happened between in the race between Rick Scott and Bill McCollum. I know that you were a McCollum fan, but I'd just like to know what the heck happened down there.
Short version is essentially Tea Party 1, Establishment 0. And this is basically just a replay of what we've been seeing around the country in the last 8 months or so, just played out here. You know, first off, it's kind of funny because the last month or so, everybody's accused me of being Mr. Establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite surprised I don't hear all you guys laughing in the background when I say that, because if anybody is not Mr. Establishment, that would definitely be me.
Well, I remember we had many conversations with you when you were up here in Indiana about the candidates that you would support, and you were very much Mr. Anti-Establishment, but you were rooting for Bill McCollum. Now I know that the governor's race down there it was basically a very unfriendly primary. To say the least.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
Do we see any of the baggage that McCollum was using against Rick Scott impacting him in the general election?
Yeah, and I think I saw some polling. I believe it came out Thursday or Friday that basically has Rick Scott with some exceptionally high unfaves.
Really?
And that's not really a surprise. I mean, that's what you get when you come out of a tightly contested primary, and especially as we have here in Florida, we have primaries.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically the core base,
mm-hmm.
And that's a completely different, different market. As you guys know, it's a completely different market than you know, a traditional open primary where you can kind of go seek voters out and bring them to your cause.
Yeah. How do you see that impacting? Because I know that we had, at least in Alaska, you know, we had Joe Miller versus Lisa Murkowski. Currently, Joe Miller is leading in the recount. Or at least I should say the counting, as they count the rest of the ballots, that Joe Miller is leading. And he was a Tea Party candidate, kind of came out of nowhere. Rick Scott, he had a lot of money going into this, didn't he?
He had a lot of money, but he's a self-funder. So mm-hmm. I think we need to be real careful and not confuse the ability to write yourself a check with credibility or viability.
Sure.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Well, it seemed as if Rick Scott's victory speech, which I've seen played, at least portions of it, played several times on Fox News this week, you know, where he's seeming to rally the base against President Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi. How is he going to be able to try to play that into any sort of victory in November?
Well, I think it's the only card he can play, to be real honest. And I think, you know, he very effectively accused Bill McCollum as being, you know, a Tallahassee insider and special interest bought and paid for and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I've been on the other side of those attacks myself. So I can appreciate, you know, having to come from that direction. The problem being for Rick Scott is that Bill McCollum is an honorable man. And he has served with great integrity. He has a tremendous reputation in this state, the election results notwithstanding. And he's one of the good guys. And one of the concerns, and you and I have discussed this in the past off air, one of the concerns that I have with all of this, hey, let's throw the bums out stuff, is that sometimes you get good people like Bill McCollum that get caught up in the crossfire.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got the ability to write yourself a $50 million check, you know, you can basically buy a ton of credibility with $50 million, especially if people are willing to overlook your past.
Sure. Well, considering that Rick Scott did win the primary, using a lot of Tea Party energy, how do we see this playing out in the general? I can gather that the Tea Party part of the Republican Party will probably be very excited, very motivated to get Rick Scott elected. How do you see this playing out with the rest of the Republicans?
Well, I think Rick's going to have the advantage in the sense that I think we're going to have a pretty high turnout for Republicans in general.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans in this state are not going to vote for Alex Sink, who is currently the state's chief financial officer, which is kind of a fancy title for a treasurer.
Gotcha.
And she's got a banking background. She was a big shot vice president for some bank. Her husband's a big Tallahassee insider, has run for governor in the past. And she's she's exactly what you would think of when you think of a banker. She's pretty boring. She's not very highly regarded. Scott's definitely going to kill her in the charisma area. And the advantage that we're going to have is Scott seems to have the willingness to write however many checks it takes to win. And Sink doesn't have that ability.
Well, the ability to self-fund down there, typically self-funders are looked at with sort of a crooked eye from voters.
Sure.
Clearly that didn't have that much of an effect in the primary as one might think. Do you think that'll turn off independents or any other kind of voters against Rick Scott because he is a self-financed candidate in the general?
Well, honestly, I think it did have some effect. I mean, one of the I read a lot of exit polling, and I find exit polling to be very unreliable, except for hearing comments and feedback from voters. And one of the constant comments that you kept hearing from people were, you know, I don't trust Scott. I don't trust Scott.
Mm-hmm.
But they still voted for him. It's kind of reminiscent of 2008 where, you know, yeah, I know he's never ran anything or managed anything or had a real job, but, you know, I think Obama is capable of being president. It's kind of the same thing. And, you know, Florida, we have 10 media markets in this state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, just chew on that for a second. 10 media markets. If you can imagine having to buy points in 10 markets down here, you know, that's the advantage that Scott has over Sync. And if you combine that with, you know, the assumption that we're going to have the turnout edge in November, which I think all of us are fairly certain we will, that just might be enough. But stranger things have happened.
Yeah. Well, I want to kind of change things up a bit on you here. I want to talk a bit about the Senate race down there. We know that the Democratic primary was Kendrick Meek versus Jeff Green, and then Marco Rubio practically ran uncontested in the primary on the Republican side after Charlie Crist backed out. And now that we see that the Senate race is shaping up, how do you see that shaking down?
Well, first I'm going to go on the record as saying at least 12 months ago I predicted that Marco Rubio would win the Republican primary. So I'm glad to see that my prediction came true. You can chalk it up now. Marco's going to win, and here's why. Charlie Crist might possibly be the least respected governor in the nation, or at least would be challenging Arnold Schwarzenegger for that title. And he's making it worse for himself pretty much every time you stick a mic in his face. You know, Charlie has two things going for him, which is basically his two bases of support, which are the tree huggers and the teachers unions. And down here, the teachers love Charlie because all they got to do is call Tallahassee and say, hey, Charlie, we want this. And they get it. And tree huggers is kind of the same thing. But his base of support does not go beyond that. And the fortunate thing for us as Republicans is that Kendrick Meek won. If Jeff Green had won, I think it would have been a much tougher road for Marco Rubio. But with Meek winning, Meek keeps a lot of your traditional diehard Democrats.
Your core Democrats, your base Democrats.
Yep, keeps them in the fold. I think Jeff Green would have given them some freedom to move, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, or at least, you know, would have given them the freedom to wander over into Charlie's camp. But Kendrick Meek keeps him home. And Charlie needs those voters to win. If he doesn't have them, he doesn't have a chance. And again, combined with the previous mentioned voter turnout that we're expecting, Marco's got this taken care of.
Well, I'm trying to figure out. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when Crist was running for governor that he was endorsed by Jeb Bush, correctly?
He was he was Jeb Bush's attorney general.
Okay. Wasn't he also the endorsed candidate by Jeb Bush and when he ran for governor?
I believe so. I mean, at that time Orange Charlie was a traditional conservative.
A traditional conservative.
Yeah, he because that's what was expedient for him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that Charlie's principles are basically as fake as a spray tan. Mm-hmm. And he's the ultimate example of somebody who just sticks his finger up in the wind and tries to figure out where he needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've reached the end of this segment, but Jacob, I want you to stick around for our fourth and final segment as we continue this conversation about the Senate race, just because I think a lot of eyes will be focusing on the Florida Senate race, even more so than the Florida governor's race. But although the interesting thing that I found out this week is that with the if a Republican wins this year's governor's race, the Republicans control redistricting. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
Interesting. Well, we will continue this discussion here in just a bit. We'll be right back. Keep it here on Gillespie on FTRradio.com. Are you on the beach right now? Are you sipping a pina colada or maybe a margarita? Are you listening to Gillespie on your Shoutcast app? April, are you? We'll be right back. And welcome back to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. We're sticking around with Jacob Perry in the fourth segment. Why? Because it's the Tuesday Evening Stupid. No, not Jacob isn't our Tuesday Evening Stupid, but one of his Florida compatriots is. It is Charlie Crist. Why? Because according to TheHill.com on The Hill's campaign blog, Crist says he misspoke on health care. Florida Governor Charlie Crist is walking back comments he made in an interview earlier today about the recently enacted health care law. Crist is mounting an independent bid for Senate against Republican Marco Rubio and Democratic Rep. Kendrick Meek. Crist told a local TV station Friday that he would have voted in favor of President Obama's health care proposal were he in the Senate. That was a reversal of his previous position against the health care law. I would have voted for it, Crist said in an interview, but I think it can be done better. I really do. But now, Crist says he misspoke in that interview. His campaign sent out a statement Friday afternoon clarifying Crist's position on the health care law. Jacob, my question for you is, in this situation, when a guy says that I would have voted for it, how is that misspeaking?
Well, his teleprompter's broken. I mean, that's the easy answer. You know, we all know that we have TOTUS, who lives up in D.C., and is currently working for the president. What many of you probably didn't know is that we actually have TOTUS Sr., who has retired and moved to Florida and is working for Charlie Crist.
Well, the thing that you brought up in the previous segment about when we were briefly discussing there the Senate race and about Charlie Crist is that he's been lacking credibility here recently, and I'm guessing a lot of that has to do with his switching of parties. Does this take his credibility down even further with voters?
If that's possible. I think what's very interesting about Charlie is he's pretty much had every position possible in his political career.
Mm-hmm.
He was a state senator, then he was Jeb Bush's attorney general. And one of the things that's interesting about Charlie is that he very rarely ever finishes a term. He basically gets elected and then starts running for the next office.
So he's an office jumper.
Exactly. And I think you're seeing that play out here, and he's trying to figure out where he needs to be in order to get elected to the Senate. And I think, honestly, I believe him when he says that he would have voted for Obamacare. There's actually no question in my mind that he supports it.
Well, I wonder how a campaign can be like, you know, the candidate can go out there and say that I said this, and then the campaign can be like, no, he misspoke. I mean, that's a very matter-of-fact kind of phrase that he's saying. And if he really did mean it, or if he really did misspeak, that even makes him look even more the fool than it does if he had just stuck with his, hey, I'm for it position. Now, I mean, walking back, I mean, how popular is Obamacare down there? I mean, it is, Florida does have a lot of senior citizens down there. So, I mean, what has been the reaction to Obamacare?
Well, you have to remember there's almost two Floridas, and I'm not stealing John Edwards' famous line, but there really are. It's almost two Floridas, and I speak as a native of Florida, born and raised in Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm.
You have South Florida, which we basically call the sixth borough, which is primarily populated by northeastern liberals, particularly New York.
As I say, is this are we talking about the sixth borough of New York and Florida?
Yeah, it is. There's a reason why there's literally about 60 flights a day from Fort Lauderdale to New York. And so that's one segment of the state. Then you've got some of the metro areas like Orlando, Tampa, and Jacksonville, which are pretty traditionally urban, stereotypically, if you will. And then you've got the rest of the state. And the rest of the state is populated by more normal people. For example, people from the Northeast, when they retire, they come down to South Florida on the East Coast. People from the Midwest, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, what have you, they go to the west coast of Florida. So that's Fort Myers through Sarasota, Tampa, that area. And it's very different culture on both sides of the state. So what I'm getting at is, in certain parts of the state, Obamacare is very popular because they're very hard left.
Mm-hmm.
In other parts of the state, not so much. And it tends to break down more along the lines of partisan divide. And even older Republicans who traditionally vote Republican and support Medicare aren't real big fans of Obamacare. It's not polling very well at all. So it's hard to figure out where, you know, is Charlie going after the sixth borough vote and trying to steal that from Kendrick Meek, or is he trying to just basically sit in the middle and try to figure out where to go?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, again, I can imagine this isn't going to play well in the Senate race then.
There's no way this is going to play well. And you know, the advantage that Marco's got going for him is that he's very principled. And one thing you're not going to accuse Marco Rubio of is flip-flopping on an issue. And it's going to be a very stark contrast with Charlie Crist.
Mm-hmm.
And Meek will just kind of be standing there waiting to throw in a comment or two to try to keep the base in his pocket.
Interesting. Well, hey, I want to get your, before we depart here, I want to get your take on a couple of other races that are of interest, at least to us, especially to the listeners of FTR Radio, is the Alan Grace and Daniel Webster race and Alan West, who seems to be a conservative darling.
Well, I'll start with the Grayson race real quick.
Okay.
You know, the one thing that's interesting about Webster, and this is not to cast aspersions on him at all,
mm-hmm.
But he's a former state senate president.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of goes against the whole narrative of, you know, the insiders are losing, because that was about a 6 or 7 way primary, as I recall, on the GOP side.
Mm-hmm.
And Webster won it pretty handily. Against some pretty credible candidates. And, I mean, Alan Grayson has gotten to the point where most Democrats are embarrassed to him. So
he's a regular feature here on Tuesday Evening Stupid, so.
You might as well just name the segment after him.
The Alan Grayson's Tuesday Evening Stupid?
Pretty much, because you would never run out of material.
That's true. That's why I'm anxious for Congress to get back, because Grayson never disappoints.
You know, and West is an interesting case because his district is very traditionally liberal. And he ran 2 years ago, didn't run a very strong race, didn't raise a ton of money, certainly not what was needed.
Mm-hmm.
And
would you compare that district to you're familiar with the Carson district up here in the 7th Congressional District in Indiana. Are there similarities?
There are similarities. One difference being is that this district, instead of basically being a minority carve-out, is essentially a liberal Jewish carve-out.
Okay.
And, you know, people hear Palm Beach County and they think, you know, the island and Rush and rich people and whatever,
mm-hmm.
forgetting that that's just an island that's literally off the shore. There is an actual county, which is very liberal, very, very liberal. In fact, it's the most liberal county in Florida. And the part of it that West is running in is predominantly Jewish, and is currently being represented by Ron Klein, who, of course, is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the one thing he's got going against him. The reverse side is, obviously, you guys are talking about him from 1,200 miles away. He's getting a ton of national support. He's got some good people on his race, some people that I know. He's got some good consultants on the race, people that you guys know.
As I mentioned, he was a kind of a conservative darling. He's been featured at CPAC. I know that Red State has been doing a lot to promote him as well. Does this conservative action affect him negatively in a very liberal district?
It could, and that's why I'm curious. You know, I think at this point, what West needs to count on is Democrat apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whatever conservatives or Republican live in the district, being excited.
Yeah.
You know, all the national attention is great. You know, being on Michelle Malkin's show and being talked about on Rush and everything else, that's all terrific. But none of those people live here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rush does.
Yeah, he sold his apartment.
Right. But, I mean, you know, and I think it's kind of the same thing that happened last time. And West became a cause celebrity because he was the guy. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. He was stationed in Iraq and was the guy that got himself in trouble for being in interrogation with an Iraqi national, and basically he pulled a gun off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
did he get the information he needed?
As far as I know, by all accounts, he did.
Well, then it worked.
But he essentially retired from the Army, lieutenant colonel. Became a public school teacher down here.
Mm-hmm.
And is really an interesting guy. And, And even race aside, he's a very interesting candidate. But it is, he's drawing some attention down here. I'm seeing his, I live in the West Palm media market, so I'm seeing his TV commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing good things out of his campaign. But like I said, I think at this point, they really need to hope for some Democrat apathy in that district because it's very heavily gerrymandered.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
It would be a huge upset, believe me.
I can imagine it would, especially with a liberal district like that. Well, Jacob, we've kind of run out of time on this segment, but I want to thank you for being with us, sticking around for the second segment to give us more insight on what's going on in Florida. I appreciate it, and thank you for being a part of the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoy it, and I'm a big fan.
All right, thanks. We'll be talking to you later.
All right, thanks, Josh.
And that does it for us on Gillespie on FTRradio.com. Stay tuned for the rest of the fantastic Tuesday night lineup. Followed immediately after us is the Aaron Proctor Show. And then at 9 o'clock, Duke Over America. At 10 p.m., the Smart Girl Report with Jenny Erickson, a show you never want to miss. And at 11 p.m., the Armchair Energist. Again, this is Josh Gillespie. You've been listening to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you again next week.